Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Third down and goal. Ryan flushed out, flips it. Touchdown, Atlanta. Sanu pulls out. A fumble for Ripkowski and recovered by Atlanta. Second down, Ryan escapes. Gonna run. Has some room and a touchdown. Gonna air it out. Looking for Nelson. He's not there. Ricardo Allen is. He comes with a blitz. Falcons pick it up and there's Jones. Flag is down. Julio Jones with a catch. Still going. Still inbounds. Touchdown, Atlanta. And that's it. The Atlanta Falcons, NFC champions.
Yeah, I'm happy for everybody in our organization. I mean, we've worked hard to get to this point, but the challenge is still in front of us. What we set out to accomplish is still in front of us, and we'll enjoy it because it's hard to get to this point. I know that from experience. It's really difficult to get to this point, and we'll enjoy the build-up and the process leading to it, but our ultimate goal is still in front of us. This team that we've had this year has been the right mix. I mean, we're a team that's gotten better as the year has gone on, offense, defense, special teams, and I feel like we're starting to play our best ball now.
Obviously not getting points, staying in the game. Their offense is hot right now. Matt's playing incredible. Playing a team like that, you gotta start faster than that. We had 0 points in the first half. You're not going to win many games like that. Kind of hurt ourselves in the first half more than they really stopped us. They have a good football team. There's a reason they're moving on to the Super Bowl.
Brady, well protected. Finds a time, and that goes in. Touchdown, New England. Chris Hogan. That's his third down conversion. Back to the go. The flea flicker. Brady to the end zone. And it's a New England touchdown. Right back to Hogan again. Third and goal. Dropping back to the 19. Patriot touchdown.
Hadn't sunk in yet. You know, every week it's kind of been one day at a time and one game at a time, and I haven't even said those words yet. So, well, I said them after the game, but not at all this week. It's unbelievable. Oh, the flea flicker. How could I forget that? It was just a great call. They were a little winded, I thought. Got the pitch back from D. Lou, and I saw Hogs, you know, burning up the field and just laid it out there for him. So we should enjoy this. You know, you never know if you'll get these opportunities in life. Unfortunately, this team has got the opportunity, and now we got to, you know, do something, go try to take advantage. It was a good day. I mean, we're going to the Super Bowl, man. You got to be happy now.
I thought we moved the ball well when we needed to. Obviously, the red zone trips need to turn into 7 points, which we've talked about before. They were better than us today. Missed opportunities, whether we didn't execute well enough, whether plays weren't made by me or other guys. At times almost felt maybe it was too big for some of the young guys.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
What is going on? Welcome to the extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leaders. Appreciate you being a part of the show. Yes, indeed. Thank you so much. Thank you very much, pal. Appreciate that. The game sucked. Did they not? Am I overstating it? Or is the NFL just having a terrible, terrible year? That's the way we open up the program on this Monday afternoon edition at 10 minutes after 3. Coming up in about an hour. At 4:10, we'll break down the AFC and NFC championship games with our friend Scott Petrak, NFL beat writer. Coming up at 4:35, we'll get away from the NFL altogether, thank God. No, I'm being a little bit dramatic, obviously, and a little bit maybe melodramatic. But we'll get away from football and talk college basketball with the voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes men's basketball team, Paul Keels. And by the way, we'll probably squeeze in a question or two about JT Barrett as well, who is talking about his return to Ohio State and new coordinators and quarterback coaches and how much difference he thinks that is going to make, et cetera. Because there's a question I'm going to ask that might not be a popular one about Mr. Barrett. And I'll ask that question of Paul Keels as well, even though we are here and he will be here to talk basketball with us. The games sucked. Essentially, the AFC and the NFC championship games had enormous promise, and they flat out were letdowns. I mean, if you really, really stop and think about the matchups that we had, the unbelievably potent Pittsburgh Steelers offense was supposed to come in with their three-headed monster for the first time fully healthy in a playoff game against New England. And Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown were going to be hooking up whenever the defense was so worried about Le'Veon Bell just slashing them, the Patriots defense, for huge yards the way he did against Kansas City a week ago and against Miami a week before that. And boy, oh boy, the Patriots are going to have to find a way. They're going to have to find a way to stop the run and get some pressure on Roethlisberger and outscore the Steelers. Well, as it turns out, they didn't have to outscore them very much because Le'Veon Bell got hurt early. And quite frankly, the play calling and the offensive game plan for the Steelers was non-existent. It was a disaster, and the Patriots rolled. What was supposed to be a great AFC matchup was crap. And the sad part is that was the night, that was the second half of the crap sandwich. The beginning, of course, was an even better game. Green Bay and Atlanta was supposed to be the best game of the day. The Packers, red hot, under Aaron Rodgers' expert guidance, just rolling through teams, a 9-game winning streak, 2 playoff victories. A team that said, you know what, or whose quarterback said, you know what, we're going to run the table. If you're going to continue to look down on us and think that we don't have it anymore, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, we're going to run the table. And then, oh, by the way, they pretty much proceeded to run the table. And you know what, they're going to continue to run the table, aren't they? In the postseason, after the way they beat Dallas in a classic last week, I mean, certainly they're going to be able to handle the not ready for prime time, arguably never ready for prime time, Atlanta Falcons. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, boy, he's going to go in there and just do some damage. The only question is going to be is can the presumptive MVP of the National Football League for 2016-2017, Matty Ice, can he match Rodgers throw for throw, even at home, and perhaps, possibly, maybe, sort of, kind of hang with them into the fourth quarter? And this is going to be a really, really high-scoring game. Well, only half of that came true. Matt Ryan not only matched Aaron Rodgers, he far, far surpassed Aaron Rodgers in terms of performance, in terms of production, in terms of efficiency, in terms of game playing, in terms of usage and spreading out of his weapons. I mean, Matty Ice gave an Aaron Rodgers virtuoso performance is what he did. Rodgers was beaten up by an Atlanta defense that does not and has not gotten anywhere near the respect it probably should. Aaron Rodgers was only sacked twice, but he was smacked around much more often than that. Some of them borderline late, I'll be 100% honest with you. Borderline late. Matter of fact, some of the hits Rodgers took at the times he took them, had they been against Cam Newton, probably would have started another NFL investigation. Why won't the league protect Cam Newton? Why won't the league protect him the way they protect other quarterbacks, especially star quarterbacks? And on and on and on, we heard that nonsense as the year went on, and I don't think it's true. I said it was nonsense then, and I say it's nonsense now, and it was proven yesterday by Aaron Rodgers taking some shots that were very borderline, to say the least, and that was effective. Quite honestly, it was a bigger mismatch than the second game was. The Falcons had a better game plan in much of the same way that the Patriots had a better game plan than the Steelers, and they executed it with surgical precision. I mean, seriously, Matt Ryan stood back there and carved up the Green Bay. Not that that's a terribly big challenge, I will acknowledge. You know, this is one of those weird things where you ask yourself, how much credit do you give an offense that does the kind of things that Matt Ryan's offense did yesterday, and versus how much blame do you give a team that, quite honestly, and we know we talked about it on Friday when I made my pick, and I picked Atlanta in that game. I was 1-for-2, as was Jim Cushlin, because we picked opposite each other, and, you know, so we had one each way. I picked the Steelers to win in New England, which was probably foolhardy on my part, but I picked Atlanta to win at home. Jim picked New England to win at home and for the Packers to win on the road, so we split it. But the point of that was, now I lost my track. Where was I on that with Matty Ice? Well, at any rate, Matt Ryan, the efficiency that he showed in this game was very, very Aaron Rodgers-like. And I remember now where I was going with that. I had a little train of thought burst there, run off the tracks, I guess I should say. I was talking about the Green Bay defense. As we talked about when I picked this game and picked the Falcons on Friday, Packers secondary is beaten up. We know that. It's been decimated. Not everybody, not, you know, Clinton Dix is still there, but they have had corner issues all season long as they've had to replace guys and get them in and out of the lineup. They've just been injured, and it's been their receiving core and their defensive secondary. I talked about this with Jim in my prediction segment right at the end of the show on Friday, and I predicted that Green Bay would lose in large part because their receivers were not going to be as productive as Atlanta's, even with Julio Jones, a question mark with the toe injury, would be, but also because the Green Bay secondary is going to have a hard time dealing with Julio and Sanu and the plethora of weapons that Atlanta can throw at you because of their secondary issues. And it all came to pass. No pun intended. It all came to pass. It appeared in both games, back to my original point of the montage as we start out this afternoon, to me, it appeared in both games like third and 12 was third and one for Tom Brady and for Matt Ryan. Didn't it just seem to you that it didn't matter what the down and distance was? If they needed to convert, if they needed 12 to convert on a third down play, they'll get 14. Or they'll get 24 or 34. I mean, no, there was no stopping. And I don't know, I'll have to pull the box score open again. I glanced at it a little bit today, but I mean, it was, see, here's the thing. This is my point. It was such a rout. Both games are such a rout. I found myself on, you know, Championship Sunday, which is like, you know, it's like a holiday for football fans. It's a holiday. It's a special day. It's a special weekend, championship weekend, when you decide the Super Bowl. You know, who's going to Super Bowl? AFC game, championship game, NFC championship game. It's really, really big. I found myself flipping channels during both games. This one's a blowout. Let's see what else is on. I ended up watching freaking some of Titanic. And I hate Titanic. I actually love the story of the Titanic. I'm actually a history buff, and I've got a few books on Titanic and that whole thing, but not the Celine Dion, Kate Winslet, Leo DiCaprio love story, but I love this. I love the movie of the and the whole thing. But I found myself, well, you know what? There's a ship going down, and there's a ship going down in Atlanta, and it's called the Packers. I might as well watch a different one. And then at night, I turned on a little bit more, because the Steelers were sinking faster than a ship at sea as well. I mean, that's how bad it got. And to the main point there with all of that, this has been a bad year for the National Football League. Ratings have been down. We documented that as the season went on. Ratings went down. The popularity of Thursday Night Football sunk to new lows. Nobody wanted to be a part of that. No matter how good the games were, and quite frankly, a lot of them were bad. Oversaturation of the product, I think part of it, I think we can all agree, that's been an issue, oversaturation of the product. But also, it's just been, there have been some really, really bad football games. And in these playoffs, you want to talk about play? Every time I say the word, I swear to God, I cannot not do
playoffs?
It. Playoffs?
Let's talk about playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs?
Yeah. These playoffs, Coach Jim Mora, Sr., these playoffs have been terrible. With the exception of the Green Bay-Dallas game last week, which I called one of my favorite games in a long, long time, in a number of years in the National Football League. The way that thing came down, where Dak Prescott took the Cowboys down to get a game-tying field goal, my oh my, with what, 35 seconds left? I thought, I mean, this is amazing. We're going to have OT football, but then I also thought, like the rest of the world did, that's Aaron Rodgers on the other side, and they foolishly left him 35 seconds. And that was enough time for Aaron Rodgers to make one of the throws for the ages, down to about the, where did they end up, on a 34-yard line, somewhere in that neighborhood? 36-yard? Oh, it was a 36-yard pass is what it was. But at any rate, it set up a 51-yard field goal for Mason Crosby to win it. And, of course, he nails it right down the middle. But, oh, Jason Garrett had called timeout right before the kick. And then he had to do it again. And then it knuckleballed its way outside of the left upright. Then back in. And then a little further. And then, oh, I mean, just a great game. Outside of that classic, the playoff games have largely sucked. The Steelers win over the Dolphins was a blowout. It was a crappy football game. The Seahawks win over the Lions was not really a blowout. Was never in doubt. There was no point in that game. I don't think that even the most diehard Lions fan looked at that and said, you know, we got them. We got them where we want them. We're the better team. Nobody ever thought that in that game. You know, we go through and look at what Atlanta did. It's just there haven't been any good games. Last week was what I call my favorite weekend in football. And that is the weekend of the division. It's right after the wild card, but before the AFC and NFC championship games. And it's the reason why is there's four essential, you know, divisional games that are just going to be tremendous matchups. And some of them last week held such promise. And they just were duds. Atlanta took apart Seattle's defense in the same way that yesterday they took apart the Green Bay defense and made that game like not even, you know, a factor. I told you that the Green Bay-Dallas game was outstanding. The Patriots, just in a walkthrough over the Texans, even without Tom Brady at his best, beat him by 18. And the Steelers game against the Chiefs wasn't without its intrigue, but it wasn't a classic by any stretch of the imagination. So the four championship games or divisional games last week were really big, and they turned out to be, for the large part, for the most part, except for the Green Bay and Dallas game, were duds. And then this week, all right, well, at least we got a couple of really good matchups here. The Steelers have long been considered to be the Patriots' biggest threat to stop them from going to the Super Bowl, and they're going to get them. They're going to get them, but it's going to be January in Foxborough. It's going to be an uphill fight for the Steelers, but it's a game. That's a game that everybody wanted to see in the AFC. I don't think there's any question about that. Nobody else would have been, that game would not have been as exciting had it been Kansas City at New England or really Houston or anybody else. It was just going to be what it was. Pittsburgh and New England, the two best teams in the AFC going at it, and it should have been a good game. Green Bay and Atlanta, because of the two high-powered offenses, should have been a good game, and both of them were duds. So top to bottom this year, NFL ratings-wise, NFL exciting slash interesting scheduled matchups wise, in almost every measurable way, the NFL had a really, really bad year. Can they rescue it a little bit with just an outstanding Super Bowl? Yeah, they probably can. And I got to tell you, I'm probably going to fall right for it again. I'm going to take the bait and predict it's going to be a great Super Bowl. The Falcons offense, under Matty Ryan, having the career year, he was simply spectacular yesterday against Green Bay. Matty Ryan's offense against Bill Belichick's defense, it's the highest scoring team in the league, Atlanta, against the lowest points allowed defense in the league, in the Patriots. And oh, by the way, when the roles are reversed, it's Tom freaking Brady making pro bowlers out of some people like Chris Hogan? What? Yeah. That's going to be rather exciting against a very aggressive Atlanta defense that found a way to get to Aaron Rodgers. And Rodgers is far more mobile than Brady. That matchup's going to be big, too. I'll fall for the bait and predict a really, really good game. But I predicted two really, really good games for yesterday, and we got bupkis. We got absolutely nothing for our money. In turn, you know, relatively speaking, because there were two blowouts. Can the Super Bowl, will the Super Bowl live up to expectations? I really think it can, and I really think it will. But if I'm talking about it the day after the Super Bowl again, and how could I have fallen for it? How did I, you know, I won't be surprised. Let's put it to you that way. Maybe I'll be surprised, but I won't be mad, because it's just you have to accept it for what it is. And right now, the NFL's product is not a great product. It really hasn't been for all season long. Want you to be a part of the discussion as we talk NFL, and we're going to get into it in depth with Scott Petrak coming up at 4:10, as I mentioned. And we're going to be taking some phone calls for you coming up as well in the next segment at 866-240-1065. We're going to talk Ohio State basketball, as I mentioned, and a little bit of football, too, with Paul Keels coming up at 4:35. And Jim Cushlin is here alongside as well. Cush, you picked opposite of me, and we were both wrong. Yeah, you picked both. No, wait a minute. What did you pick? You picked the Packers.
I had Green Bay, New England.
And I flipped them.
Yep.
Yeah, I had the Steelers and the Falcons. So each of us had our home team win and our road team that we picked.
Speaking of home team wins, you know, because I'm not trying to, though I more or less agree with the vast majority of what you've been saying, because they've been duds, and it kind of tacks on to how this whole year in the NFL feels like it's gone. But, you know, nuts and bolts kind of thing. Speaking of home teams, do you think it means anything? We once again, you know, record-wise, had a few of those in the wild card, as we've had every year. There's still people that, you know, because that hasn't been fixed, by the way. So does it mean anything that 8 out of the 10 teams in the playoffs so far, one, were at home?
What do you mean, does it mean anything?
Well, for example, I believe the Raiders were on the road, even though the Derek Carr thing, you know, he was out by then. But they had far superior record, yet Houston hosted because of the division. You know, that comes up. And a lot of times we've seen that better team, especially in the earlier stages, go on the road and win that kind of game.
Yeah.
And this year was as home heavy, when you think about it for a second, as I've seen in a while. 8 out of the 10 went to the home team.
So are you suggesting it's a problem, or
no? I'm just wondering if that maybe changes any of that conversation that inevitably comes up every year.
I don't know, unless maybe I'm still not quite understanding what that conversation is. To the point you said about the Raiders,
that if you win the division, it should not guarantee you necessarily in the wild card round, mostly should not necessarily guarantee you the be home game.
No. Okay. Now I see where you're going with that. And let me say, first of all, you're right about the Raiders. Had Derek Carr played, I think they beat the Texans.
Right.
I think they beat the Texans.
They were 12-4, and Texans were, what, 9-7 or whatever?
Yeah, exactly. And that changes some things then. Secondly, I only have a problem with the division winner gets the home game in a wild card matchup if the division winner has a crappy .500 record or worse.
So 8-8 or below, one of those situations.
If you're 8-8 or 7-9-1 or 7-8-1, which we have seen those things in recent years,
yep,
with really, really horrible divisions and horrible division champions, if somebody who's 8-8 or 7-9 or 7-8-1 is hosting an 11-5 team, I got a problem with that.
Yeah.
I got a major problem. If you're an 11-5 team like the Steelers, for example, or 11-5 this year and they were a wild card, you have 11-5 and somebody else is 8-8 or even 9-7. I do have a bit of a problem with that. But by and large, it's really only if the division is that crappy do we talk about that and do we complain about that. So for me,
fair point.
For me, home teams winning a bunch of games, 8 out of 10, as you pointed out, isn't a problem. It should be harder to win on the road in the playoffs, and you should be rewarded with that home game if you do have that kind of a season. Only the exception being, you know, and that's the outlier time, is when you've got a division filled with crap and 8-8 wins and everybody else is 7-9, 6-10, 5-11, or whatever the case might be.
Right.
That's the only time I really get my, my dander up.
I got you. And the second thing that I've been trying to think of in lieu of these games were duds kind of thing is, well, in one of the situations, we have Matt Ryan. And you mentioned career year a few minutes ago in what you were saying. And, you know, that is so borne out, not just in his regular season numbers, like 38 touchdowns, 7 picks. Compare that. Last year, it was 21-16. 2012, when the Falcons were 3-3 and 1-done in the playoffs, it was 32-14. So by a wide margin, his career year. And, you know, this is a guy with the 08 draft, so that's, you know, it's not like he's in his third or fourth year. He's been here a few times, had teams that were record-wise better than this year a couple times. And I find it so interesting, especially I keep doing this, partly because maybe I feel like I need to apologize for literally not including him in that original MVP discussion you and I had a few weeks ago.
I'll tell you what, that really surprised me that time, because you were really listing off all of the right traits for all of the right guys, and I thought you were pretty well on it as far as, and I was like, okay, and where do you put Ryan in it? And you're like, who?
I'm like, what? Oh, Ryan. You're almost like, I did forget about him.
Really? And listen, I'll defend you to a slight extent on that, because we have gotten used to not trusting the Falcons as an organization.
Yep.
You know, they get off to a great start and then turn out and crash and burn. Now, that was under Mike Smith, too, former head coach, too, was not, in my estimation, a really, really good head coach.
True, but they still had 13-3 seasons that were 1-done.
Exactly. And I think a lot of that was coaching, to be honest with you. But we have become conditioned, I think, as fans,
yep,
and analysts, to not trust the Falcons, and that maybe everything isn't all that it's cracked up to be. So if you, in the subconscious part of your mind, said, I'm not going to trust the Falcons or their quarterback because they always are a little bit overrated, they're always, you know, not quite as good as what their record indicates, maybe subconsciously,
yeah,
you thought, Matt Ryan isn't as good as what his stats say they are, and that's why you just left him out of your mindset altogether. That's, you know, just a little defensive view, and I don't know if you need it, but I can see how you might have left him off because of the anti-Falcon bias that I think
is and that's
pervades.
Interesting that you weave that into the anti-Falcons thing. It's not that I don't like the Falcons.
Yeah, I mean just distrust them.
Right, exactly. And in both of these cases, you know, it's day after the conference championship games, and the biggest takeaway for me is I feel like on two fronts I need to eat some crow on this one. You know, with Matt Ryan specifically and the Falcons in general. This is now only the second time they've ever actually been going to a Super Bowl. The other time was they lost in John Elway's swan song in the 98 season, and if they could somehow beat the Patriots in 2 weeks, that'll be a pop quiz time for you, Bob. That'll be Atlanta's second ever championship in the first since. We know it very well, sadly, you and I.
Since when?
Braves, 95.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're talking about the city of Atlanta.
That's the only Atlanta championship there's ever been.
Gotcha. Sorry. I was thinking where I thought you were talking about the last time the Falcons were in the Super Bowl and they lost.
No, I didn't know you were doing the whole thing. But if they could beat the Patriots, this will only be the second time ever that an Atlanta team has won a title, the first since something you and I know very much about.
Okay, I didn't hear it clearly enough, and that's on me. But you know what? That's right, and that is very interesting. And you know what, Jim? I find myself pulling for the Falcons, not because of that, but I do find myself pulling for the Falcons. Last year, 2 years ago, beg your pardon, 2 years ago, if you recall, as we were doing the show, I found myself pulling for the Patriots for the first time ever because I was so, I just don't like Pete Carroll.
Seahawks.
I don't like his style.
Yeah.
I don't like Seahawk Nation. I don't like Richard Sherman. I don't like Doug Baldwin. Their mouths, Marshawn Lynch, and I'm just sure someone could find all that crap.
We got a good game out of that one.
We did. And we had a great game, in fact, one of the shocking endings of all time. But I was rooting against the Seahawks, so for the first time I found myself pulling for the Patriots. Last year, I was definitely pulling for the Broncos because I really, you know, just I wanted
Man,
Peyton
get
to
the
go
end.
Out. Yeah, I wanted Peyton to go out a winner, even though he was struggling and not having a very good year. Clearly, physically, just shot, and I was really hoping they would get it done. This year, I find myself back in a sense of normalcy. Because I don't have anything against the city of Atlanta. I don't have anything against the Atlanta Falcons. I like Matt Ryan. I love Julio Jones. Boy, did he make a statement yesterday about who the real best receiver in football is. Sorry, Odell Beckham. Sorry, Antonio Brown. Sorry, Dez Bryant. Sorry, pretty much everybody else. And it's Julio Jones yesterday. I love a lot of those guys. And I don't have any reason to, so I'm back in a sense of normalcy now. I'd probably be rooting for anybody else who is playing the Patriots, unless it was the Seahawks again. But it feels really good to have a rooting interest in a game where I can kind of say I like these guys. I don't have any real reason to hook myself up with Atlanta. But we found ourselves a foil for the Patriots that is indeed eminently rootable. I want to see them win their first championship since 95 as a city, as you just pointed out, and I really want to see. I like to see greatness validated, too. And Matt Ryan's season this year, he will change or forever etch, if not change, write his legacy with his performance 2 weeks from yesterday. He will be the MVP who won the Super Bowl, or he'll be the MVP who flamed out in the Super Bowl and may never get back to it again. And it'll always be just one of those Philip Rivers-like, stat sheet.
Boy, this is going to be an interesting thing to bring up over the course of the next 2 weeks, because of course, you know, with coming up to the Super Bowl now, we have that. It's 2 weeks, so that's going to be an interesting thing to probably take apart as we go through the next weeks, because I agree with that sentiment, because, you know, like I said, Matt Ryan, he's not exactly like Cam Newton young, you know, for example. He was drafted in 08.
He's 28, I think.
Yeah, no, he's 31.
He's 31?
He was an 08 draft pick.
Get the heck out of here.
08? Yep. I'm looking at the numbers right now. He's been in the league 8 years.
I didn't realize that. I didn't realize it was been that long.
So
oh, yeah, I knew it was 8 years, though.
So what you're saying about this...
I knew
this,
it was 8 years. I didn't do that math right, but you're right. Go ahead.
So, when you look at it that from this perspective, what you're saying is dead on. You know, he could write himself into a legacy as a... thought of better quarterback. I don't think he'll go in discussions as best ever, but he'll be thought of much more positively. If he and the Falcons can't, yeah, given how history usually goes in these kind of situations, it feels, who knows if he'll get back. And then you're right. He'd be in that kind of, think about quarterbacks today. You mentioned Philip Rivers. Yeah, he'd be more thought of in the grand scheme in that kind of category, right, instead of
which to me is not a flattering place to be.
Right.
You know, I hear a lot of people, and I know this is really getting off into the weeds, and we need a timeout, which we'll take. But I hear people all the time talking about, well, Philip Rivers is a Hall of Famer. Philip, how is Philip Rivers a Hall
right.
of Famer?
He's a good quarterback.
He
He's
a
not a Hall of
good quarterback
famer.
With a lot of great stats in an era when everybody has great stats because it's a passer's league all the way down the line. But a guy who never gets to the playoffs or rarely does and never wins and hasn't been to a bowl, I'm sorry, I don't like that. And this is Matt Ryan's chance,
you know,
to
what?
Escape
perfect.
That category.
You know, and another example I use on that type of front, a little homerish coming out in
Matt
this
Stafford.
One, Kosar.
Oh.
You know, here, good stats, decent quarterback. Actually, maybe I'd have to double check this. Maybe more playoff games than Philip Rivers did. Never gets to the mountain. So, you know, yeah. At the end of the day, we like him because of the whole Cleveland thing. But at the end of the day, he's in that
a
giant,
little different though.
Crowd.
A little different though, because quite frankly, Bernie's stats were never as good as Rivers. Bernie's stats
true,
were
overall,
good.
Yeah.
Yeah, overall, now he was never like it wasn't like that. I mean, those teams that he directed to those back-to-back AFC championship games, for example, with the drive and fumble, they were such a perfect blend of passing and running with
true.
Mack and Beiner. It wasn't like this was air, you know, air Kosar, and like yeah. it is with the Chargers, with Rivers, and so on. So
I guess I'm just going to the point of in that kind of, you know, that lower tier.
Yeah,
which is
yeah.
where Ryan could find himself in, which I don't think he would be if he wins just this one.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah, I agree. And again, I mentioned that name Stafford there, too. When you talk about big-time stats
yeah.
in a big-time passing
sad to
era
say.
That doesn't win anything, you're not going to be remembered very well long-term for it. Matt Ryan has a chance to break out of that mold, the Stafford, Rivers, et cetera, mold. And I'm rooting for that to happen. Okay, that's a lot of stuff packed into one opening monologue or in some cases, dialogue. I want to get you involved. 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. Who do you like going forward? And what did you think? Is the NFL a struggling product right now? Because it had a terrible year, and it's just had a whole bunch of terrible playoff games. We'll get your thoughts on that as we continue as well on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
It's a New England-Atlanta Super Bowl, and it's coming up in 2 weeks, and it could be a very, very good one, but I am very, very cautious when I say that because I really, really thought that we'd have a couple of good ones yesterday.
Vegas right now in the early going thinks it will be. It's got Patriots by 3.
By field goal, yep. That's exactly right. And now, of course, the question becomes, or one of the many questions becomes, what will Roger Goodell do if Tom Brady takes the Lombardi Trophy and Bill Belichick at the end of a season that began with Roger Goodell satisfaction guaranteed, sitting back and watching Brady squirm with a 4-game suspension?
Oh, I so want to see that. That's
no, that's
the only
why
reason I want the Patriots to win. I so want to see that visual.
That's one of the reasons why he wasn't even there yesterday for the presentation of the AFC trophy. He was, I'm going to be at the Atlanta one. I'm going to be there with Atlanta Green Bay. He didn't want any, you heard at the, I don't know if you watched any of the post game yesterday in Foxborough. What were the fans doing? Where is Roger? You know, they're chanting for Goodell. They want him there. They want to see him have to hand that trophy to Kraft, technically, with Belichick and Brady on each side, smiling from ear to ear, saying, yeah, you want to talk to me now about freaking inflated footballs and deflated footballs? Here we are. A year after all of this crap went down, I threw 28 touchdowns with 2 picks, and we're back in the Super Bowl. KMA. So this is Brady's opportunity to just completely destroy the Deflategate argument forever. I mean, really, just if a guy with 4 Super Bowl titles and 6 Super Bowl appearances needed a way to bolster his legacy, this would be the guy. Here's a win after all of that, after the suspension, after the new procedures and protocols were put into place about how to protect the football so nobody can touch them and make sure that the air isn't affected in any way. While you're doing all that, I'm out there winning yet another Super Bowl. It just cements his legacy as if it ever needed to be cemented. And that's something that Ryan Clark was talking about this morning on First Take I found very interesting.
The reason Tom Brady was punished the way he was, the reason that the Patriots were punished the way they were, was because of the subsequent investigation and the way they handled that. We know that it's a strict fine for not having the footballs inflated to the point that they were, but they were so hell-bent on not being seen as cheaters, they handled the investigation in a certain way. When Tom Brady plays quarterback, I agree with Stephen A., I think nothing about deflated footballs. I think about Tom Brady's greatness. I think about the fact that he's on his way to becoming, if he wins this, and maybe without winning this, the most accomplished and greatest quarterback of all time. I understand that. But that does not take away the fact that this team, this organization, has a history of cheating. And that's not an opinion. That's not a guess. That is for sure. That's not me just talking. This is who they are. And yes, they are better than everyone. Yes, they conduct business in a different way that makes this an exceptional organization, an exceptional team.
They have cheated.
And that makes you a cheater. Now, if you look at many of the other teams, there's Carolina Panthers, they have cheated. They pumped sound into the stadium. Pittsburgh Steelers had an issue early on in the season that was investigated about footballs being deflated. And so there are other teams who have tried things. They're just better at it than other people. But when you sit in green rooms and when you talk to coaches, when you're at combines and when you're at Super Bowls and you're sitting at the tables with coaches, and coaches say, yeah, we knew they were videotaping. We knew they were videotaping our signs. So what we did was just run somebody on the field. When you talk to a player and they said every time you make a certain call, you can see them checking because they knew the call, the signs. Yes, that's real. That's not fake. They know that. But it does not change the fact of what Tom Brady has accomplished. It does not make me look at him any differently as far as...
But another championship would make everybody look at him a little bit differently. If anybody looked at him cross-eyed because of the Deflategate thing, now they're going to look and say, you know what, it doesn't matter if the football is as big and overinflated as a basketball or if it's flattened out like a freaking Frisbee. The dude is just the best. That's what this will prove if Brady wins yet another Super Bowl. Mark in Toledo is joining us now on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Phone number 866-240-1065. Dial it now if you want to get in. Hey, Mark, what's going on?
Not much. What's going on, guys?
Not too much. You tell us what you're feeling today.
I'm going to go with the Falcons and the Super Bowl. The way I look at it is Falcons, if you look at their offense, they're big, they're strong, they're fast. You look at the Patriots' defense, it's smart, outsmart everybody, finesse. So I love the chess matchup. I'm going Atlanta in a close one, 31-30, just because the physical nature will outbeat the brains that beat Belichick in this particular Super Bowl. And I'm with you. I do think it's going to be a great Super Bowl.
Tell me why you think Braun beats brains this particular time.
Only this matchup.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Obviously, we have seen times where brains and strategy and game planning will beat a team that has physically superior athletes. So why is it this time around you think the Falcons' strength and physicality will outperform the game planning and the coaching of Belichick and the smarts of the Patriots?
You know why I love talking to you? Because I knew you were going to ask that question, and I prepared the answer. So here's why. Bill Belichick is the master at taking away your best weapon. The Atlanta Falcons' best weapon is Julio Jones. The problem with that is Atlanta set an NFL record this year for most touchdowns to 13 different players. So if you take away Julio Jones, they have so many other weapons that can beat you. They got the best back duo in the league with Coleman and Freeman. So I believe if you take away Julio, which is extremely hard to do, by the way, who I feel is the best receiver in the game. I'm tired of people talking about Antonio Brown. But
you know what? I said the same thing at the top of this show. To me, I have changed on that. I have been Antonio Brown. A lot of people have been Odell Beckham, especially because he's got more years in the first 3 years.
I know.
I'm just saying what people have said. I have, in that fight, I've always taken Brown. I think Brown is better, and I think he's more consistent and et cetera. But Julio Jones and the performance I saw yesterday, especially on an injured toe, and people need to know how hard it is to perform as a receiver making precise cuts if one of your big toes is jacked up. What he did yesterday to that defense with Green Bay, to me, it just underscored the size. Is that something, you know, unfortunately a guy like Brown and Beckham can't match. You're born the height you are. And Julio Jones' size, his strength, his weight and his speed at that size and strength.
It's ridiculous.
To me, it put him over the top. I've been a Brown guy as the best receiver in the league for the last few years, but I am now on the side of Julio Jones as being the man.
Yeah, and with that being said, with
the other big receivers they have in Mohamed Sanu, and you got Coleman and them coming out the backfield, and Gabriel, which I'm glad he left Cleveland, but are coming and throwing so many different weapons at you. That's the only reason why I'm taking Atlanta. And the other thing is, I know you said is the NFL a dying or whatever, however you worded it.
Well, it's in a downward trend. It's never going to die, I don't think, but
right.
It's trending downward as opposed to upward at the moment, because I think it's been a ratings challenge season, a really competitive, exciting game challenge season. Too many primetime games on Mondays and Thursdays were duds, even on Sunday nights. And it's just, that's one of the reasons the ratings have been down. And I think the playoffs have underscored that.
Right. And the only thing I'll say to that is, yes, the ratings have down, but I got a buddy who works in NFL office, yep, and ticket sales are way up.
Really?
So, yes. And so not only that, I guess my question is, why do people say it's a bad game if it's a blowout? Because here's my question. Aren't that what they're supposed to do? I mean, I played football. I didn't want a close game. I wanted to kick your tail. I wanted to blow you out. So for them to say the games yesterday were bad games, I don't see why this is a bad game.
Well, here's a very simple reason why. Because yesterday's first game was exciting for only the city of Atlanta, Georgia. That's it. The rest of the country was like, oh, man, this sucks, and they're changing the channel. That's what I mean. It's not bad because it's a blowout, but it makes the rest of the country lose interest.
I understand
you saw what happened with Dallas and Green Bay the week before. Whole country. I mean,
It's also Dallas and Green Bay. Dallas and Pittsburgh have one of the biggest fan markets, so you can't really use that as an example.
I'm going to call you bluff on that one. It's not because it's Dallas or Green Bay or Pittsburgh. I mean, if that would have been Atlanta and Seattle, if you're going down to the wire and you're getting a field goal to tie it at 31 with 35 seconds left, and the other guy comes back and with zeros on the clock kicks another, the game winner.
You're absolutely right.
Man, I don't care what cities they are, the NFL national public will be all over it.
You're absolutely right.
Touchdowns or four touchdowns, they're turning the channel.
Okay, but here's my question. Yeah, I get that. You are turning the channel. But I get that. But also, didn't you guys just get done talking about how Atlanta always underperformed? So had Atlanta lost that game again, or had Atlanta got blown out, we'd be talking, here we go again, Atlanta underperforming. But because Atlanta stood up and did exactly what they were supposed to do and beat the crap out of Green Bay.
No, they did. And all kudos to them. Mark, don't get me wrong, brother. I'm just saying that if Green Bay had put up a better fight and Atlanta still did their thing and still got their groove on and are going to the bowl, it would have been more interesting for fans across the country.
I agree with that, and I accept that. I've been listening to people at work, and I'm like, why are people? They did what they were number one offense, New England's number one defense. They did exactly what they were supposed to do.
What you just said, I want to, because we got to wrap it up here, but what you just said is the other factor here. When you said it's a brawn thing, brains versus brawn, physicality, better athletes on one side, but the smarter guys on the other side, or whatever you want to phrase that.
Yep.
The other one is what you just said. Number one offense against number one defense, scoring offense versus scoring defense. Usually, those matchups in playoffs or in Super Bowl championship games, the defense wins. You always look for the defense to find a way to solve the outstanding offense.
Just like last year, Denver took on Carolina.
Boom.
This particular year, I'm taking Atlanta. I'm out, Bob.
You got it, man. Thanks, Mark. Great call. Yeah, he's rolling the dice. He's going against the grain this particular year. And I respect the hell out of it. He makes a great case about the number of weapons that New England is going to have to contend with, which is very, very different than what they had to deal with the Steelers yesterday. When Bell went out with the Steelers yesterday, they took away Antonio Brown, and the other receivers for Pittsburgh were nowhere near up to the task. None of them. Not Sammy Coates dropping balls, not Jones dropping balls. You had guys just unable to step up. Atlanta doesn't have that problem. You take Julio Jones out of the way. Kobe Hamilton, excuse me, yesterday for the Steelers. You take Julio Jones out of the equation, they got a whole bunch of other dudes who can beat you. I think Mark makes a very compelling case. We'll get some more great cases with more phone calls and Scott Petrak's thoughts, too, coming up right after the top of the hour. Sports Center, which is next. Hey, Jimmy, before I go to Sports Center, you know what I want to do? I'm going to do something very cool. I've got tickets to a fight that's coming up on February 10th, so a little over a week or 2 weeks away. Toledo's own Robert Easter is defending his IBF lightweight title against Luis Cruz at the Huntington Center on February 10th. I'm going to give a pair of those away right now to caller number 8 during the break. Caller 8, those tickets are yours. If you're a fight fan, get on it and watch Robert Easter defend that title against Luis Cruz at the Huntington Center. Now we'll get SportsCenter right here on the ticket.
Third down and goal. Ryan flushed out, flips it. Touchdown, Atlanta. Sanu pulls out. A fumble for Ripkowski and recovered by Atlanta. Second down, Ryan escapes. Gonna run. Has some room and a touchdown. Gonna air it out. Looking for Nelson. He's not there. Ricardo Allen is. He comes with a blitz. Falcons pick it up and there's Jones. Flag is down. Julio Jones with a catch. Still going. Still inbounds. Touchdown, Atlanta. And that's it. The Atlanta Falcons, NFC champions.
Yeah, I'm happy for everybody in our organization. I mean, we've worked hard to get to this point, but the challenge is still in front of us. What we set out to accomplish is still in front of us, and we'll enjoy it because it's hard to get to this point. I know that from experience. It's really difficult to get to this point, and we'll enjoy the build-up and the process leading to it, but our ultimate goal is still in front of us. This team that we've had this year has been the right mix. I mean, we're a team that's gotten better as the year has gone on, offense, defense, special teams, and I feel like we're starting to play our best ball now.
Obviously not getting points, staying in the game. Their offense is hot right now. Matt's playing incredible. Playing a team like that, you gotta start faster than that. We had 0 points in the first half. You're not going to win many games like that. Kind of hurt ourselves in the first half more than they really stopped us. They have a good football team. There's a reason they're moving on to the Super Bowl.
Brady, well protected. All kinds of time, and that goes in. Wide open! Touchdown, New England! Chris Hogan! That's his third down conversion. Back to him they go. The flea flicker. Brady to the end zone. And it's a New England touchdown. Right back to Hogan again. Third and goal. Talking back to the 19. A touchdown.
Hadn't sunk in yet. You know, every week it's kind of been one day at a time and one game at a time, and I haven't even said those words yet. So, well, I said them after the game, but not at all this week. It's unbelievable. Oh, the flea flicker. How could I forget that? It was just a great call. They were a little winded, I thought. Got the pitch back from D. Lou, and I saw Hogs, you know, burning up the field and just laid it out there for him. We should enjoy this. You know, you never know if you'll get these opportunities in life. Unfortunately, this team has got the opportunity, and now we got to, you know, do something, go try to take advantage. It was a good day. And we're going to the Super Bowl, man. You got to be happy now.
I thought we moved the ball well when we needed to. Obviously, the red zone trips need to turn into 7 points, which we've talked about before. They were better than us today. Missed opportunities, whether we didn't execute well enough, whether plays weren't made by me or other guys. At times almost felt maybe it was too big for some of the young guys.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
I think that's an understatement. You heard from Big Ben at the end there. The moment was too big for some of the young guys. I think that is absolutely true, especially some of the young receivers. Hamilton, Coates, those guys dropped crucial balls. One was a touchdown. One was on their first drive. Would have been a first down with a huge, huge play and momentum that Coates dropped. They were not able. And I'll tell you what, Mark, the last caller, spot on. In my mind, spot on. When he said that New England does a great job, and I think most analysts say this and see this, New England does a great job of taking away your best player. The question then is, can your secondary players pick up the slack? Pittsburgh's secondary players and those other receivers not named Antonio Brown could not pick up the slack. I think if you take away Julio Jones to the extent that that's possible, boy, oh, boy, Atlanta's got a lot more weapons that surely can. Great call. And now we continue. We'll get more of your phone calls at 866-240-1065. But as it is 4:10 now, we want to say good afternoon to our friend Scott Petrak. As promised, Scott is an NFL beat writer, been covering the league for many, many years, joining us with some analysis of the AFC and NFC championship duds and some preview, a little preview of what we might see 2 weeks from yesterday in Super Bowl 51. Scotty, how are you, my friend?
I'm good, Bob. How are you, bud?
I'm great. Great. Good to talk to you. I'm great other than the fact that I was disappointed with the two duds. I mean, this has been a really, really underwhelming playoff for the National Football League. I talked about this in the first half hour, Scott. I feel as though the league, which is coming off of a down year ratings-wise, coming off of a down year performance-wise, I think a lot of people have commented as the weeks went on, especially in some of their primetime games, they're getting crappy matchups. They're getting crappily played games. And now the postseason, which is supposed to lift all of that, We have two potentially great games yesterday. Both are blowouts, not very interesting to watch beyond the first quarter. Do you agree? Is this just kind of a perfect capper this postseason to the way this NFL regular season went?
Yeah, I could buy that theory. I definitely was disappointed in the whole postseason, and especially mm-hmm. yesterday. I thought we were going to get two good games. We had four great quarterbacks. I thought the matchups would be better. I guess it just shows you that, if stuff starts going the wrong way against a really good team, it's tough to get it turned in the opposite direction.
Yeah, I think that's true against a really good team. That is one thing that we found. And I think the only exception, by the way, you said the whole postseason. I think the great classic game between, Green Bay and Dallas last week was really only the outlier. I think the vast majority, if not all of the other games, have just been duds. What Seattle did to the Lions, what New England did to the Texans, what Pittsburgh did to the Dolphins. And I guess the game against Kansas City was a decent game last week, but the Dallas Green Bay game was the only one that was really an exciting or an instant classic. So I guess my question is what do you attribute that to? Is it just, hey, it's coincidence? It's bad luck? You had a bunch of bad games, blowout games or non-interesting games in the postseason, or is there a trend here? Is there something about the game that is, I don't know, maybe it needs to be tweaked or something, Scott?
No, I would think it's coincidence, Bob. I was trying to think about that all day today. Is there a reason that for the blowouts? And I don't think there is. Because, I think Green Bay's a good team. I don't think they're at the same level as Atlanta. And then you get a couple injuries, you get a couple turnovers, and that's what happened. And then, New England is a tough team to beat. Pittsburgh didn't play up to its potential or ability. But I think the league is pretty balanced overall. I think New England is better than most teams in the AFC, but I don't think they're necessarily head and shoulders above. Dallas is the best team in the NFC all year, and they get beat at home in their first playoff game. So I think it was just kind of a confluence of events, and I wouldn't expect to see this year in, year out.
All right, I hope that's the case because, obviously this league has just carried, North America. It's far and away more popular than basketball and baseball, even if they are in thriving times. The NFL has just had a license to print money because they've run themselves so well. So I hope this is just a fluke. Now let's talk about those fluky games. Let's start with the early game, which, of course, was the NFC game. Aaron Rodgers came in as the hottest quarterback on the planet. A lot of people, you and I discussed it last week too, saying it was the best 9-game stretch any quarterback has really ever played. Jim and I went through some of the great years quarterbacks have had. We looked for 9 games in the Brady 50-touchdown undefeated season. We looked for 9 games in Manning's 55-touchdown season. We looked at Marino's 84 season. We looked at Dan Fouts and his Eric Coryell years and Drew Brees. We couldn't find any really that matched Rodgers. And that's why a lot of people said, even though the Falcons were favored, the Packers were going to get the win in the Georgia Dome. How shocked were you when you blink your eyes and Matty Ice has them up 17-0?
Well, I was stunned by the lopsidedness of the game. I expected Atlanta to win just because I thought Matt Ryan had more guys around him. And I know Aaron Rodgers, we've talked about it a million times, Bob. I love him. He's my favorite quarterback in the league. What he did leading up to that championship game was phenomenal. I just thought with the injuries that he had at receiver, it was going to be tough for him to match Atlanta point for point because I didn't think Green Bay could stop Atlanta, and that's what wound up happening. So Aaron would have had to be perfect, and the guys around him would have had to be perfect. And you get the early missed opportunity, you settle for a field goal and he misses. Then you get the fumble inside the red zone. When you're down 17-0 that fast, Atlanta can rush the passer. They don't have to pay that much attention to the run, and Green Bay doesn't have a big running game anyway. And then they get offensive line injuries. And Aaron did his best, and he just couldn't match. And then Green Bay never got a stop. Atlanta scored almost every time they had the ball. And you can only do so much as a quarterback.
Every time it was a second and long or a third and long for Ryan and the Falcons, it just appeared as though somebody came so open that it was, it's hard to describe. Caught in between zones, or I don't know if the receivers were just that good and the Green Bay secondary that bad that the receivers were just beating their coverage so badly. But, it was like Matt Ryan could have just walked the ball over and handed it to some of these guys. They were so open, and it seemed that way all game long. Is that the Falcons' game planning and strategy and way to attack that Green Bay defense? Or is that the, hey, you know, the Packers have had a very, very difficult time all season long because of injuries in their secondary, and it really caught up to them this time around?
I think it starts with Kyle Shanahan, the coordinator of that Atlanta offense. Mm-hmm. He's always been able to scheme guys open. And that's what he does best, and that's why he's going to be the 49ers head coach next year, is because he's made himself a great reputation as a coordinator and as a play caller. So that's where it starts. And then Green Bay's secondary didn't help at all. I mean, when they had man-to-man matchups, they couldn't cover Sanu, they couldn't cover Julio, and you know, that just made it easier for Matt Ryan. But it starts with Kyle Shanahan. He's able to run the play action that frees guys up in zones. He does so much variety that defenses don't know what's coming. And we saw, you know, a big screen throwback to the fullback that goes for like 40 yards. We saw him try to, you know, we saw him run the wildcat, and I'm thinking, why would he run this when you're marching up and down the field and it gains 8 yards right up the middle? He just has so many tools in that playbook. I'm fascinated to see how the matchup goes between him and a Bill Belichick defense.
You know, I just had a great caller who was laying out the reasons why he's going to pick Atlanta in the Super Bowl. And he talked about how, generally speaking, we kind of, you know, if there's a really physically dominant team, and that's what the Falcons appear to be, they just have so many weapons. They are physical on offense and defense. They have tons of skill, talent, and so on and so forth. Whereas the Patriots look more like they win on guile. They win on strategy, game planning, et cetera, et cetera. They're smarter. They play the game smarter. And in this matchup, he's going with the physicality and the skill and the speed of the Falcons over the Belichick advantage as a coach and the knowledge of what's coming on different plays and so on and so forth. Do you see it the same way, even if you don't agree that which side will win yet? And I'm not going to ask you for your pick, but do you see this as a matter of, you know, straight up physically, the Falcons are better, but you know, Brady and Belichick have been down this road so many times, they can make a superstar out of a guy named Chris Hogan that most people had never even heard of yesterday, and they'll find a way to game plan and strategize. Do you see it as kind of brawn versus brains, in a manner of speaking here?
I think there's some truth to that. You know, you start a quarterback, and Matt Ryan's not a better quarterback than Tom Brady. They probably had similar years. You know, one's going to be MVP, the other one probably finished second or third in the MVP voting. But if you go position for position, that's probably accurate. Obviously, Julio Jones, I'm not sure there's a guy in the league that matches up physically with him. I like Atlanta's pass rushers better individually than New England, and I think that's where the game could be decided. If they're able to get a pass rush with four or five guys, then you have a chance to beat Tom Brady, and we saw it in the Giants Super Bowl wins, Super Bowl upsets over New England. So I can see that point, but I hate to undersell the talent on that New England team, because it isn't just Bill Belichick and Matt Patricia and Josh McDaniels in a room coming up with some crazy game plan. Julian Edelman makes plays. Deion Lewis made plays. LeGarrette Blount is tough to tackle. And their cornerback that made a huge play in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago keeps getting better. I don't think he can handle Julio Jones, but he's among the better guy corners in the league. So they have players, but I don't think player for player they match up with Atlanta.
We're talking to Scott Petrak, NFL beat writer, joining us to talk about the AFC and NFC championship games and a little early preview of the Super Bowl. Scott, the lines for Julio Jones and the kid that I just mentioned, Chris Hogan.
Chris Hogan.
Were identical. 9 catches, 180 yards, 2 touchdowns each in their 2 respective games. Julio Jones is widely regarded as the best wide receiver in the game. You know, it had been maybe Antonio Brown, depending on week to week and what he's done for the last 3 years, et cetera. Some people like Dez, some people like Odell Beckham, but Julio Jones, I think, physically, size, strength, speed, the matchup is a nightmare for anybody. Chris Hogan was a lacrosse player in college. He played one year of college ball, bounced around a little bit between Miami and Buffalo, and suddenly is matching the championship game production of Julio Jones, the best receiver in football. If that isn't an example, though, of the best physical specimen being countered by, I mean, I'm going to be honest here. I mean, Chris Hogan shouldn't be able to do that. He doesn't have those physical attributes, and yet there he is in a position to be as wide open as he is in all of those plays, and that's just got to be a matter of game planning and got to be a matter of strategy, because they can do that with Edelman, who also should not be. And would you think, Scott,
sure,
that Edelman or a guy like Hogan would be in any other offense and be as dangerous and as potent a weapon as they are in Bill Belichick's offense, Josh McDaniel's offense to be particular in this case, Tom Brady's offense. I just feel like they can make the most average of players, the undersized, not as fleet of foot guys, and make them superstars and make them playoff winners and make them champions, unlike anybody else really has ever been able to do.
Oh, yeah, I think you're right about that. And a lot of it does come down to scheme. And look at Hogan's two touchdowns that popped into my head from yesterday. One, he's running down the seam. Nobody covered them. And the other is a flea flicker where the safety comes running in the backfield. He runs right by him. So you don't have to be a star to make that play, right? Anybody on Atlanta could have made that play. Probably anybody on New England could have made those plays. Anybody in the league could have made those plays. So Belichick and McDaniels do a great job taking advantage of guys' skill sets. And I think Hogan, you can replace Hogan with other guys. I think Edelman is a special case. He's got that short area quickness that Belichick and Brady love. We saw with Wes Welker for years. And they're able to take advantage of it. Having the best quarterback of all time obviously helps. That's why Bill Belichick's been great, because if you go through the roster of guys he's had, and that's what makes Tom Brady great. You know, you had Randy Moss, and then you had a bunch of quote-unquote no-names at receiver, and they've been able to win a ton of games and go to a ton of Super Bowls doing it like that, and that's why they're an all-time classic team in the history of the NFL.
You may have answered the question already when you just said having the greatest quarterback of all time. So on the Brady v. Montana, four championships each argument, you are firmly in Cam Brady?
I think I am. Bob, you know, I've thought about this for a long time. And for a long time, John Elway was my favorite quarterback of all time. Not favorite like I liked him.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought he was the best combination of everything ever to play in the NFL. Just the huge arm, the ability to run, going to all those Super Bowls, the bad teams finally winning a couple Super Bowls. When you go to 7 Super Bowls and you win 4 and you get a chance to win 5 and you do it scoring a ton of points, you do it by completing a ton of passes, you know, I don't know how you pick against Tom Brady.
The reason I ask is because of the legacy-defining moment here. I was talking about this earlier, and this is how I feel about it, and I want your reaction to it. I think, you know, it's you're either Team Tom or you're Team Joe in Montana versus Brady already because of the tie. I think the fifth not only breaks the tie, but tell me what you think about this from a legacy-defining standpoint. This season began with Tom Brady serving a 4-game suspension for Deflategate, for illegally tampering with footballs, and then trying to cover it up. Essentially is how it came out. Whether what you agree with or believe is irrelevant, this is the way it started out. And now it's going to end with him potentially raising another Vince Lombardi trophy. To me, this does so much for his legacy, because there are folks who think that he cheated by deflating footballs. And I think everybody would agree that after that all went down, the protocols must be so incredibly tight, the procedures for making sure that the integrity of the footballs is never in jeopardy, nobody touches them, and so on. Here's Tom Brady saying, you know what, do whatever you want to the footballs. You make them as big as round as basketballs or make them as flat as frisbees, I'm still going to throw it better than everybody else. 28 touchdowns and 2 interceptions later, and now another Super Bowl championship just does, I think it just elevates him over the whole the Joe Montana discussion in every measurable way.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I was hard on Brady. We talked about it, you know, when the flick had happened. I was hard on him. I thought he had knowledge of it. I think since then, more facts of how the NFL handled the case have come out, and I've softened on Tom Brady. And I think he proved everybody how good he is at 39, which is really remarkable when we think about the high level of play he has at that age. And the fact that Bill Belichick's probably going to trade his backup because he thinks Tom Brady's going to be good for another 4 or 5 years, or elite for another 4 or 5 years, is really remarkable. And I agree that that's a tiebreaker, but I also would point to the 2 Super Bowl losses he had. I think you'd get credit for going to those games and losing on, one was a fluke play, and really there are 2 crazy Super Bowl plays that cost him 2 more championships, and we could be talking about a guy going 7 for 7, which is really unfathomable.
You're 100% right, and I agree. You need to get credit for that, for the fact that you went to these 2 other ones. I'm going to call you out on the Tyree play being a fluke play, though. That thing has bothered me for years. You know, everybody calls that a fluke play, luckiest catch of all time. To me, that took remarkable concentration. And when his arm is being pulled apart to be able to trap the ball against something else and hold on to it, I mean, you know, fluky, I think if Jerry Rice makes that catch, it's considered one of the greatest of all time. If Lynn Swann, who's considered one of the greatest acrobats, traps a ball against his head in order to pull that thing in and win a Super Bowl, it's one of the greatest catches of all time. Why does David Tyree get so crapped upon by the NFL historians who call it lucky?
Well, I mean, I get what you're saying. You don't see a whole lot of catches on top of a helmet, I guess.
But you also don't see too many, how do you say that? Not necessities, but you don't see too many situations where you kind of have to. And his arm is being pulled, both arms are being pulled, and instead of having his hands pulled apart and it's an incomplete pass, one hand keeps it and pins it against something else. And it's like, man, you know, you see a guy do that against their thigh on a catch that's down low, and it's incredible. But because it's against his helmet, it's like, oh, what a lucky catch. I don't know. I give Manning, Eli, that is, and Tyree, all the credit in the world. They yanked another Super Bowl title away from Brady and Belichick with that, and I think it's underappreciated.
Well, I mean, that's fine. And the way that play started was crazy too. I mean, Eli looked like he was down. They tore half his jersey off.
Yeah.
He still just throws up a ball, you know, hoping it lands, and it does. So I guess that's why
his escapability on that play. Yeah, his escapability on that play, Scotty, to me is like, you know, amazing. I mean, he easily could have been and probably should have been taken down on that, and he escaped not once but twice out of the sure grasp. The kind of a play that, again, if a great scrambler does it, it's like, oh, what athleticism. And Eli is not noted as a great scrambler, does it? And it's, boy, that's fortunate. I just feel like neither one of those guys get their due for that particular play. To the losers real quick, we'll get to I know Jimmy's got a question about Matt Ryan and his legacy in a moment, but to the losers for a moment. The Steelers and the Patriots, I think, were pretty widely considered the two best teams in the AFC. This is how it should have gone. I don't think, the Texans division champion, I don't think anybody else was really, even the Chiefs, would have been much of a threat to Brady in Foxborough last night. But how far away are the Steelers? How much of an impact do you think the lack of Le'Veon Bell had? How much of an impact do you think of an inexperienced secondary that got better as the season went on? No question. They were really struggling when they had a four-game losing streak, and they got better, but certainly no match for the game planning of Brady and Belichick and McDaniels. How far away are the Steelers, do you think, from getting their seventh?
You know what? I don't think it's that far away. I think you need Le'Veon Bell to show up bigger in the huge games, and maybe that's just staying healthy, which he wasn't able to do yesterday. At the beginning you talked about the inability of the young receivers, and that was huge. You know, I think people underestimate the start of games and how important those are, and when Coates didn't make the play on the throw down the sideline on the first drive, that set the tone, and they had a chance to take a lead, and they couldn't do it. But I think what separates Pittsburgh from the great Pittsburgh teams of the past, they don't have the guy that can get to the quarterback. They don't have the Greg Lloyd and Kevin Green and those types of players. And James Harrison just isn't the same player at 38 or whatever he is.
The clock for a couple weeks in the playoffs against Miami and against Kansas City. He turned the clock back, and he looked like that guy from 2008 when he was player of the year.
Right, but you can't count on that week in and week out at that age.
No, of course
not. And they've tried to draft guys, and they haven't had the success. So I think they need to focus on the secondary and the D-line, because I think given more time with Ben, they have all the skill positions they need, and their offensive line took a huge step this year.
Oh, yeah, I think their offensive line is much more solid as well. How many more years does Ben have at an elite level in your mind?
Well, he's class of 2004. I think he's got another 4 years. You know, for him, it's all about staying healthy. Can he absorb the hits? Because he takes a lot of hits. But that's what was great about this year for the Steelers. The hits he took was so far down that I think it extends his career. And as long as the offensive line plays at that level, he's good in the pocket. He creates just enough plays outside the pocket. I don't see him going away anytime soon.
Last thing on these guys, and then Jimmy wants to talk about Matt Ryan. You mentioned that Belichick is going to be willing to get rid of his backup quarterback, who is highly sought after because he thinks Brady has another 4 years at an elite level. Do you remember about 2 years ago, wasn't it, that Brady, I think according to most people, jokingly said he wanted to play for another 10 years, and people laughed, ah, ha, ha, real funny. I don't think he was joking. I really don't. I mean, the guy is 39, right? He's 39?
Yeah, 39.
He's doing things that people can't do at 39. Did you see any lack of velocity on some of those throws yesterday? Did you see any lack of of anything. I mean, really, in a season in which, again, if he'd have played all 16 games at the same pace that he played his 12 with 28 picks and 28 interceptions and 22 touchdowns and only 2 interceptions, which is the greatest ratio in NFL history for that many attempts. I mean, I think he's playing better now than he ever has. If anybody doesn't need 4.4 speed that made them great at 25, or whatever it is that makes, you know, younger players greater than older players, if anybody doesn't really subscribe to that, it's this guy. I mean, it sounds stupid to say that he could play this until 45, 46, but I mean, how do you bet against him based on what you see?
No, you're right, and that's why it is. It's truly remarkable. The only thing I think you have to worry about if you're the Patriots is the one big injury at this age. You know, if he gets a back injury. If he falls on the right shoulder wrong, then it's so much harder to come back from one of those injuries when you're 40 years old. But he's remarkable getting the ball out of his hands. He's done a great job. He's been injury-free except for that one knee injury in that opener, however long ago that was. So you can't bet against him. People have been betting against him since he was, you know, pick 199 or 200 in 2000, and he's been phenomenal since. And every time you think, okay, he's declining, he proves you wrong.
Yeah, and you know what? You're right about one injury away. I mean, look at Peyton Manning, you know, the neck. And it was supposed to have ended his career. It's remarkable that he was able to come back and do the things he did after it. But if you have that injury at 38, 39, 40, 41, 42, it's all over at that point. You know, Manning had it in his mid-30s and was able to come back and play strong into his late-30s and win that last championship. But that is the X factor there. We're talking to Scott Petrak, NFL, NFC and AFC championship games yesterday. Obviously, Super Bowl coming up in 2 weeks. Jim Cushlin is here with us. Jimmy, go ahead. What do you want to talk about with Matt Ryan?
You know, you guys were talking a little bit ago about Brady and legacy and comparing him to things. And we were also thinking last hour, too, guys, about where would Matt Ryan in his particular career? I mean, the Falcons and Ryan have not been really ever close to this type of point. Well, the Falcons were as a franchise in 98, but that was it. They've slipped up at times in the playoffs in the Ryan years. He's not young. He was drafted in 08. He's 31, so there is that chance he might not make it back to this type of point. So when it comes to a guy like Matt Ryan, I think, Scott, this is kind of a game where if he can actually pull off and the Falcons pull off an upset against the Patriots, he'll have an interesting legacy as one of those guys that did win a Super Bowl, which will carry a little more weight. And if he doesn't and never gets back here, then historically speaking, he's in the, say, Philip Rivers level of quarterback. Good, but his teams never could really do it kind of thing. So I think this is an important game for his legacy in a twisted way.
Oh, I think that's completely fair. You know, the guy's the number 3 pick in the draft, so he had pedigree. He's been good. He's been in an NFC championship game before. But you're right. This was a breakout season for Matt Ryan. I think he's always been a little underappreciated when he's had weapons around him and a good team around him. I think he's played at a really high level. But they've had some coaching issues down there. They had a turnover. You know, they haven't always had the weapons around him. But you saw what he could do when he had a great offensive coordinator. He's got great playmakers. And this is a big game for him. He's never going to be a Tom Brady, Peyton Manning. That's just not who he is. But if he can string, you know, 5-6 more good years, get to another Super Bowl, then you have to start talking about him. If he wins, let's say he upsets the Patriots and they win another Super Bowl before he retires, then all of a sudden is he in Eli Manning territory? Maybe he is. I bet the numbers are pretty comparable.
Yeah, I completely agree. And, you know, do you have a rooting interest in this, Scott? I mean, you know, a lot of people from the Cleveland area, like you are, like Jim Cushlin is, like I am, know that Bill Belichick was not exactly in Cleveland what he was or what he has been in his historic career in New England and are not big fans of the Patriots. I've never rooted for the Patriots in a Super Bowl with the exception of when they played Pete Carroll 2 years ago, whom I can't stand. But I am really, really pulling for Matt Ryan to write this chapter of his legacy. I really, really hope he's able to, you know, finish it out with the MVP and a Super Bowl championship at the same time and deny Belichick and Brady one more. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I find it difficult to root for New England just because Belichick's history of, you know, quote unquote cheating. I think he's hard to deal
tactics.
With. Correct. He's hard to deal with from a media perspective. And on the other side, I like Alex Mack. I spent a lot of time with him. I like Kyle Shanahan when he was in with the Browns. Taylor Gabriel was nice. I interviewed him right before he got cut this year. And Matt Ryan, I've talked to plenty of people that have been around Matt Ryan, and they can't say enough good things about what a class act he is. So, you know, I don't have a rooting interest, but if I had to pick, I'd like to see Atlanta win.
Yeah, you know, I like that too. And by the way, your point about Belichick not being friendly with the media is spot on. Last thing before you go, you're a reporter by trade. If you were given an assignment and you could pick it, you had to have a 10-minute one-on-one camera, on-camera conversation with either Bill Belichick or Greg Popovich. Which one do you do?
You know what? I think I'd go Pop, just because if you got him going, I think you could have some gold there. And I think you would struggle. I would struggle much harder to get Belichick to open up at all. I think if you found the right avenue, Popovich could be great on some things, and I'm just not sure I could get Belichick to go there.
But the difference is Popovich, you could walk away embarrassed as all hell because he's just going to say something to make you feel like you're 2 inches tall, like you're an idiot. Belichick won't make you look like an idiot. He'll just feign the, well, I don't do the snap face or
right.
one of those lines that he gave you. Well,
That's true.
Scotty Petrak, great stuff. I appreciate the analysis. Great breakdown. I'm with you. You know, we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks and maybe get your Super Bowl prediction. I didn't want to ask you to predict today. I'm not ready to predict today either. The league's number one scoring offense against the league's number one scoring defense, it should be a great matchup. I thought yesterday's would be great matchups too, and they weren't. But I think this one should be. I want to digest it and analyze it for a couple of weeks. We'll talk to you right before the Super Bowl and get your thoughts then. Does that sound all right with you?
Yeah, that sounds good, Bobby. Thanks.
All right, Scotty. Thanks for the time, man. Have a great day. Scott Petrak joining us. It's 4:37, so you know what we're going to do. First of all, we're going to congratulate Dan Golke, I'm guessing is the pronunciation of the name I see. Dan in Delta was the winner of the tickets to the fight coming up on February 10th. I've got another great prize that I want to do for you. Did you know that Journey is coming to the Huntington Center? They are this summer in June on the 25th. Don't stop believing. It really is true. Tickets go on sale Friday at 10 a.m. at the Huntington Center box office. There will be an internet presale starting Wednesday at 10 a.m. And that will run until Thursday night at 10 p.m. on our website at 1065theticket.com. with the password WTOD. But I'm going to hook you up right now with a pair of tickets to see Journey at the Huntington Center. Caller number 10, you want to go back to the 80s, I'll meet you there because I absolutely love this idea. Caller number 10, you have got them at 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. We will set you up, and then we're going to come back and talk to Paul Keels, the voice of the Buckeyes, right here on ESPN 1065.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Rolling on our weed is 4:45, final segment of the Extravaganza. Congratulations to Chad Treen of Wallbridge, who won the tickets to Journey coming to the Huntington Center in June. And don't forget, beat the box office. Those tickets will go on sale on our website for an internet presale starting on Wednesday at 10 a.m. Tickets go on sale at the Huntington Center box office on Friday. All right, let's take a break from the disappointment of yesterday's AFC and NFC championship game duds and talk about a different kind of disappointment. The Ohio State Buckeyes basketball team allowing Northwestern to win in Columbus for the first time since I was just a wee little boy, much younger than even my own son right now. 1977, the last time it happened. Here to break that down for us is the voice of the Buckeyes, Paul Keels, right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, Paul, how are you?
I'm good, Bob. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm real good. I appreciate you spending the time with us on this Monday afternoon. And let's talk about what in the world is going on with the Bucks as Northwestern. Not to impugn Northwestern's season they're having. They're a very good team right now at 16-4 and 5-2, but they're not supposed to win in Columbus. This hadn't happened since I was a little kid.
I was in my second year in college the last time they won in Columbus.
Yeah,
and as you said, Bob, not to impugn Northwestern because they have a very good team. Yesterday was their fourth road win in the Big Ten.
Wow.
But, you know, I think what you saw were some of the deficiencies that we've seen all along with Ohio State. And what really was concerning was after the fact hearing them talking about how the concern arose with a bad Friday practice. And I think we've seen from this team when they have played well, their win last week over Michigan State, their win last Wednesday at Nebraska, which, you know, that was something that really probably deserved more attention than it got. But this is a team, for them to have success, they've got to show more energy. You know, diving on the floor for loose balls like they did at Michigan State, getting double-figure scoring from all of their starters. It's a team that doesn't have a much margin for error. And even despite how poorly they played from an effort and execution standpoint, they still had a chance yesterday But their abysmal free throw shooting and their awful turnovers really were a big part of why they could not win this basketball game.
Let's talk more about the bad practice. I'm always fascinated by that, those parts of the conversation as far as how well teams play. Coach Hills will always tell you, and I always teach the young kids that I've coached through the years, you know, practice how you want to perform because you will always perform however you practiced. What happened? What kind of bad practice? What did Coach Mata attribute that to? What can you tell us?
Well, they didn't say anything specifically. and I think one of the things that Dad Mott and his staff is really good at is not throwing individuals under the bus. So I think it probably tells you when there's an indictment of a small number or maybe a large number of guys. Now, keep in mind, too, after the Wednesday game in Nebraska, they got back, you know, in an ungodly hour Thursday morning, and I'm sure Thursday was probably, I don't know that for a fact, but I think Thursday was their mandatory off day.
Okay.
There probably is an anticipation that it took a little while for them to kind of get going. But where these teams at Ohio State have been better in this situation, when you had guys like David Leidy, like Aaron Kraft, like Jarrett Sullinger, even guys like Matt Terwilliger, that if things weren't going well, then the practice became more competitive than the games at times. And, I think you put Greg Oden and Mike Conley in that context. This team doesn't have that kind of player on it. And I think you see that in some of the games. There's not a guy out there that's going to, you know, gather guys up and get them, you know, rattle them in a positive manner to get them pointed in the right direction. And also, they don't have a guy on this team that's going to go out there and make a big play either offensively or defensively when it's needed. And, why that's not happening, I'm not sure. But it just doesn't seem to be a team that's got one of those go-to players as far as execution and go-to players as far as really being able to pull guys through a difficult time.
Thad Mata can't do anything about the latter, but let's talk about the former. Isn't it and I don't mean to come down on coach either because they're struggling in a little bit right now, but if you recognize you don't have that kind of leader and you can't forge one, because sometimes you can't. You can't coach that out of a guy if they don't have it in that guy. Isn't that what a coach has to be? Doesn't a coach, even if he's not necessarily the pull them together and rah-rah or kick them in the behind type of guy to motivate, if he doesn't have a natural born motivator on his roster, doesn't that kind of fall to him? And is coach just not capable of that?
Absolutely. It all ultimately falls on the head coach, regardless of what team and regardless of what sport. I think you can look at both last year and this year, and you can see, and maybe even the season before, you can see that there were some players that maybe they just didn't develop the way you thought they would when they first got to Ohio State. Now, you know, certainly in the past, you can look at some of the guys that were on the last team that went to the NCAA tournament and find that. Thad Mata's line last year with a difficult season they had was, hey, playing better is always an option, but no question. And I think that's what gets tricky about recruiting and all these recruiting rankings, whether we're talking about football or basketball. You can see what these athletes have done at the high school level, but how are they going to adjust when all of a sudden in each game and in each practice, for that matter, Bob, they're going up against guys that are just as, if not more talented than them. That's the tricky part about coaching. That's the tricky part about recruiting. But you're right. It does come down to the head coach and the coaching staff to try and find whatever way they can, whatever it is, to get these players, A, number one, more developed, and A, number two, for them to reach down and pull it out of themselves.
We're talking to Paul Keels, the voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes, the Hoops team with a big win, as you pointed out, Paul, that did not get enough attention. The win over Nebraska on a last-second shot, but certainly they're getting a lot of attention for Northwestern, coming out of what they call their house of horrors, I think is what they had called this, that Ohio State has been to them on the road, not winning since 1977 there. Jim Cushion's got a question about those Wildcats. Go ahead, Jimmy.
You know, and I'm thinking about this and now seeing, you know, looking down the line in the schedule, Northwestern's got some tough, tough games in the Big Ten remaining. I see two Indianas, two Purdue's, two Illinois. Let's throw in a Wisconsin, Maryland. So they got a ton of work to do with the biggest part of the Big Ten still yet to come. But now that you've seen them, Paul, and I feel this is a fun question to broach, because unless they were to face off in the Big Ten tournament, that's it against Northwestern for this year. I got to say, from here on in, guys, I am a pseudo fan of Northwestern, and here's why. They're off to such a good start. If they can win some of those games in their tougher part of the Big Ten schedule that I mentioned, they might actually put themselves together a decent tournament resume. And lest we forget, Northwestern is the only power school, so all the various power conferences, and I even for basketball guys, by the way, I include the Big East, American, and Atlantic 10 in that. Mm-hmm. Northwestern is the only school amongst all those conferences to never make the NCAA tournament. You've now seen him in person, Paul. Can this team
I never
actually
knew that
end
statistic,
that,
by the
end
way.
That? Yeah,
that's amazing.
Yeah, can this Northwestern team be the one that actually goes dancing?
I think they could, Jim, and they have been kind of the sweetheart of the ball because of that fact that they've never been, and they came close a handful of times. And when they made the decision a few years ago to let Bill Carmody go as their head coach, it was met with a lot of controversy because he took them from a non-competitive level to a very competitive level. Chris Collins has taken it even further. And watching the first thing that jumped out at us yesterday during the game, Northwestern doesn't play zone defense anymore. They used to play a lot of gimmicky zones, and that caused problems. Under Bill Carmody, they did a lot of the slowdown backdoor, you know, get guys caught off on back screens and really played a lot of gimmicky basketball that they were successful at. This is an athletic team. It's a team that's got some depth. They've got outside ability. They've got a junior point guard in Bryant McIntosh, who's a dangerous player. Scotty Lindsey is an athletic forward, and they get an experienced guy in Vic Lawback, who they lost last year because of injury, who's really given them a lot of intangibles, and two Ohio kids that are crucial players, Derek Pardon, their starting center, and Gavin Skelly, who's their backup center. Pardon from Cleveland, Skelly from Westbrook. Now, they've also got, if I'm not mistaken, they've got five road games out of the way on their schedule now in the Big Ten. So, yes, they've got some tough matchups
and four
coming.
Road wins, as you pointed out. I'm sorry, and four road wins, which at this stage is very, very impressive.
It is, and, you know, what their other impressive win was at Nebraska. They gave Nebraska their first conference loss of the year, and that is, for Hoops guys, that's a tough environment. So, this could be the team that does it. You know, Jim, I think, and Bob, if they can hold their own in the regular season, get in the conference tournament and win a couple of games at least, then I think we probably look at them. And also remember, too, this is their last year they're playing in their current home arena. It's shut down next year for major renovation. They'll play next year in DePaul's building before they go back to their campus building. So there's a lot good happening with Northwestern basketball.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's an amazing stat, Jim, that you just told us. I did not know that. I probably should have known that, but I did not. The only the only school in all of the power conferences basketball I did not go dancing ever. I really hope they do break that skid. More immediately, quickly, if we can, Paul, Minnesota coming up on Wednesday. Let's talk about the Golden
yes.
Gophers. That's another home matchup. What do you see?
A program that's been struggling, although they had an impressive win over Ohio State earlier, a game that they won by 10, but it really wasn't that wide. And then Saturday they go to Iowa, and Iowa's been struggling too. So hopefully these are two chances, if Ohio State can play the way they did against Michigan State and the way they did in some stretches against Nebraska, to try and get a good thing going again.
Paul Keel's joining us with a look at the Buckeyes basketball. Hey, real quick, Paul, before you go, I wanted to ask you about football, if I can, for a moment, because as we all know, JT Barrett is coming back for his final year of eligibility. A lot of people thought that might happen because maybe his pro prospects at the quarterback position are not very high. How do you feel about JT coming back? For all of the fondness, I think, that so many people have for him, they saw the limitations, maybe, a little bit of him as a passer, come back to bite them as they got to the playoffs. And there were some, I think, at least people I've talked to, Paul, who have said, you know, I might like the transition to a more pro-style quarterback, a guy like Joe Burrow who's sitting there and waiting, and he's going to have to wait another season now with JT coming back. JT made some statements I read in the column today about how he really saw a change in the offense needed, be a coordinator, quarterbacks coach, and so on and so forth to take the next step. How do you feel about all that? Is it a good thing that JT is back with new leadership around him? Or do you think that maybe a shift to a different kind of QB was in order?
No. I think it's a good thing he's coming back. We've seen what he can do, both throwing and passing, beyond this year. You know, even dating back to the year when he got hurt when they won the national championship. The addition
Absolutely.
Of Kevin Wilson will be great for him. So I think it was an encouraging thing for JT Barrett, knowing there was going to be some changes in the offensive staff. Very, very much in favor of it because we get a chance to see him break more records, Bob.
Oh, yeah, he will certainly add to some already amazing Ohio State career totals. I just wanted to throw that around. If you look on some message boards, there's some folks who are saying, you know, I would like to have seen somebody else play quarterback this year. All due respect to the great records and accomplishments of JT Barrett. But, Paul, thanks for the time. We appreciate it. We're out of it, and we'll talk to you next week.
You got it. Take care, guys.
Thank you, sir. You got it. Music is playing. I don't usually take Paul Keels into the music like that, but it is what it is. Thanks so much for being a part of the show today, for listening, for commenting, for anything else that you may have done. And guess what? Tomorrow at 3 o'clock, we'll do it all over again, even better than we did it today. Stay where you are, because Drive Time is next right here on The Ticket.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You're due for your biannual cleaning, something you usually forget and would rather not remember. But you just got a reminder from the Gentle Dentist in Worthington. Call 614-431-3311.